It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said the patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have three square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. I am Kim Munson, and welcome to the show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. We've got a very important show planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines, some positive things that are happening out there in the first segment. Second segment, Colorado Representative Kim Ransom will be joining us. She is on the Joint Budget Committee. And one of the things that the legislature has to get done before the end of the year is they have to pass a budget. And so they are actually working on that, even though they are I don't know what the exact term is. I don't think they're adjourned. I think that we'll ask her what that is. And then in segments three and four, Paul Lenigro will be with us. He is a group insurance analyst with GIA. And we're going to talk about the consequences of this public health option. It's House Bill 201349. And typically when you see some kind of a word like option in there, that's a good word. It kind of implies choice. But actually there's all kinds of force within this particular piece of legislation. And it will ultimately, I think the consequences could be that it would push out private insurers here in Colorado. And we're seeing right now kind of socialist policies of what happens. We're seeing right now the effects of like the Green New Deal. And you know what, Producer Steve, people are not liking it very much.
Well, it's funny. I do a lot of YouTube stuff, either here, you know, collecting sound bites and whatnot, or at home for either car maintenance or hobby type stuff. But every video that I pull down has whatever the group is that's not really for this insurance thing, It always has at least a 5-second bite in the front that says no.
Absolutely not. And I think one of the positives of this whole coronavirus thing is not only are people stopping and stepping back from the busyness and they're with their families actually trying to stay informed on things, I would recommend that you limit your exposure to television and also social media. Get out there and also take a walk. Granted, you'll have to be 6 feet from somebody else, but take a walk. But we are seeing the veil is being pulled off on some of these really bad policies. One of the things that we've had a lot of regulations on our trucking industry, and they're pulling that back so that we can make sure that we can get goods to our stores. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that maybe those regulations weren't a good thing.
What were they there for in the first place?
Exactly. Another thing, let me find it here. Patty's done such a great job on all of this, is that, I'll find it here, is that plastic bag bans that municipalities and states have been putting into place. I've always thought it was just really kind of ironic that you wanted to tax people for going to the store and picking up goods that actually makes their lives better. And so there's been this push to put people into the virtue signaling reusable bags, which actually Cody Hubley had done some research on it. And there's a lot more that goes into the production of those. And so their carbon footprint, or their greenhouse, whatever, the climate change footprint is actually more detrimental with the reusable bags than the clean plastic bags. But we are seeing that they're pulling back on these bans on plastic bags. And think about it. You know, there's been this push to have you bring these dirty old bags into the store, bringing those germs into the store. And so once again, the coronavirus is shedding light on a very bad policy. So, Steve, I find that very positive.
Well, everywhere you look, this the spotlight seems to be on things that we hadn't been thinking about. And so is there a positive side to all this? And the answer appears to be yes.
Yes. And okay, this was from Forbes. This is where Patty found it. It's the pandemic prompts call to suspend or repeal bag bans and taxes. I love that. I think that's good news as well. So as we look at these issues, my friends, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. Socialism ultimately makes us all equal in our misery. And right now you can see that we've taken so much for granted in our society. The fabulous thing to go into a store and be able to get all of the things that you wanted at the grocery store, we took that for granted. And so I think I'm really grateful, Steve, that we have this wake-up call to realize that we have been so blessed, we've taken that for granted. And I think that's also another positive thing that's coming out of this whole coronavirus thing, Steve.
And, you know, you stop and you think, you walk into a grocery store or a Sam's Club and you see what has been done. And, there's a panic that can come across you in a little bit until you start thinking it through. Are we necessarily out of things, out of food? It's like, no, the food supply chain was measured to, work at a certain rate. And certainly people's overconsumption, people's hoarding has gone against that, the rate that we would normally disperse, common everyday items. So let's just, don't hit the panic button. Just let the supply system reacquaint itself, come back up to speed, but don't panic.
Yeah, let's just settle down a little bit. As the Queen says, stay calm and carry on. So interesting that the inspiration and wisdom that I had pulled for today was I want to go over to this one. It's Ike Eisenhower. Ike Eisenhower was the general of the army, and he was a statesman. He served as the 34th president of the United States from 1953 to 1961. And during World War II, he became a five-star general in the army and served as the supreme commander of the Allied force in Europe. He was responsible for planning and supervising the invasion of North Africa in Operation Torch, was 1942 and 43, and the successful invasion of Normandy in 1944 and 45 from the Western Front. And he said, pessimism never won any battle. And we need to remember that. I want to go to an article in just a minute, but I have some funnies, and I think you're really going to like this one. Are you ready, Steve?
I am.
Okay. Piers Morgan is an English broadcaster, journalist, writer, and television personality. He is currently a co-presenter of the ITV breakfast program Good Morning Britain from Monday to Wednesday each week. And this is what he said. He said, think about it, lads. The coronavirus has been created by women. There's, number one, no sports. Number two, all the pubs are shut down. Number three, there's 14 days of quarantine, so you can finally get all those odd jobs done. Number four, the symptoms of coronavirus are flu-like, and they know that's our kryptonite. And number five, they even had the audacity to name it after a beer.
Yes, audacity. Yes.
Aha. Uh-huh. And a couple of really good things, Patty. Well, you know what? I haven't said thank you to the team. To you, Steve, and Zach, and Patty, and Keith, and Charlie, and to you listeners, you've got a purpose today. Stay calm, carry on, strive for excellence. A smile, help a neighbor, and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. This is from the Spectator US. There was an opinion piece in the Washington Post by Helene Olin that suggests that President Trump believes that the coronavirus can be conquered by the power of positive thinking. And she said, no, President Trump, the coronavirus can't be fixed that way. And it was based on his enthusiasm for the philosophy of his early mentor, Norman Vincent Peale, and the book, The Power of Positive Thinking. It is pushing it to blame him for attributing to positive thinking the power to fix the coronavirus unaided. But actually, it seems like they'll go after this president on anything. And if you continue on, you realize that Norman Vincent Peale realized that with positive thinking, in partnership with, you know, for example, if you know, somebody has a health challenge, in conjunction with you know, the doctors and surgery and God's hand on all those things can work together. And, you know, one of the things, Steve, that I have felt over the years as we have moved, had this movement to the radical activist left, is they actually, I've seen kind of poo-pooed and looked down on people that had a positive attitude. And that's something that I grew up with, is always striving for excellence and working to look towards positive things, things that will uplift us. And I think that it's really important that we realize that positive thinking in conjunction with smart actions, washing your hands, as somebody said, don't be going out and licking any banisters or anything like that, but to you know, take action, positive thinking, you know, this really can get us through. And as Ike Eisenhower said, pessimism never won any battle.
I think doom and gloom is part of their arsenal.
It is. Because you scare people.
Let's drag you down. Let's make you think that things aren't, I mean, not necessarily rosy, but things aren't on an even keel. That there's a problem. We need to fix it. We're so darn smart, and we're going to fix it.
Yeah, so they use fear. And you can see how that can make people panic. One other piece of encouraging news, and Patty got this from What's Up With That, that says there's encouraging news that three new medical studies show a commonly available anti-malaria drug known as chloroquine, aka it's a phosphate, is showing strong results against COVID-19, also known as the China virus, infections in both China and South Korea. So that is really good news as well. I'm going to go to break early today because I want to talk with Representative Kim Ransom. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my very valued sponsors. And with this edict to shut down bars and taverns and all here in Colorado for 30 days, this is really going to affect our restaurant industry right now and on the short term, all the people that work there. And so I would highly recommend that stop by and pick up some Hooters wings or some of their great other things that they have and take it home for dinner. Or you can actually have one of the services deliver Hooters right to your front door. But make sure that you're out there doing what you can to keep life as normal as possible and support these restaurants and bars that and taverns that are being closed down right now to people dining in. And I would greatly appreciate it if you would drop by Hooters and take something home or have it delivered to your front door. And also Water's Edge Winery is another of my great sponsors, and you might drop by there and pick up a bottle of wine to take that home. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Representative Kim Ransom. She's on the Joint Budget Committee and about what is happening down at the legislature, even while they are not meeting. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Would greatly appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and like the show as well. That helps us out a lot. On the line with me is Kim Ransom, Representative Kim Ransom. She's actually my representative, which I'm very excited about. And she is on the Joint Budget Committee. Welcome, Kim Ransom.
Good morning, Kim. How are you today?
I am doing just fine. So we've got a lot of important information to go through. And you are on the Joint Budget Committee. And the budget needs to be passed before the legislature adjourns in May, correct?
Well, that is what has typically always happened. That is our deadline. Theoretically, if if this virus, if the epidemic, the pandemic continues, we could actually pass the budget anytime up into June 30th. That would create some crises. You know, it would create some very quick work at the end as departments were trying to implement what was passed at the very last minute. But yes, the goal is always to pass the budget before we adjourn on May 6th.
Okay, and what is the term for what we're in right now as with the legislature not meeting? That's not adjournment. So what is that term?
I looked on the website of the legislature just so I could ask, because I thought of that same question, and they actually said that we are in adjournment for now.
Okay.
So I think that we're in recess, and I don't know that the terms are problematic for you and I to use. I think that there are legal ramifications for one or the other, but technically right now we're just not meeting.
Okay.
And it's rather unprecedented, as you know.
Okay, and when are you supposed to convene again?
The resolution we passed on our very last day gave us a date certain of March 30th.
Okay.
So we are supposed to have a gavel come down at 10 a.m. on March 30th, which is a week from Monday. That being said, if we still have requirements to limit gatherings to less than 50 people or less than 10, I'm not sure how that can be delayed or if it will be delayed, because I do know that there are a lot of people very anxious to keep the legislative session progressing.
You know, I actually think that the legislature should not convene until we have our bars and restaurants opened back up. But that's just me talking on that, Kim Ransom. So
Ditto. I agree.
You know, okay. Well, let's jump in here. You are doing really important work. So what do you think our listeners should know this morning? And you and I talked yesterday. I've got the show so jammed up with guests right now, which is a great thing. But it's really important that we have this conversation. So we will be continuing this conversation with you tomorrow morning in the second segment as well. So start us off, Kim.
Okay. So the Joint Budget Committee meets year-round, and we have been meeting full-time since early November, hearing from departments with what their requests are, what is going on in their departments, why they need more money. And each department head comes in and makes their request for us. And we get a lot of background information to read and find out about. We match all that up to the governor's budget request, which is issued each year on November 1st. So back in November, we received, and it was a balanced budget request from the governor's office with what they believed the state should do, and with their priorities, of course, based on the most recent forecast. We received quarterly forecasts as well, and so that would have been based on the September forecast. We then received a December forecast right before Christmas, December 20th, we received one, and it still looked very rosy. And look at the federal economy. Look at what President Trump has done. Look at what has happened, what was happening nationally through that time, the stock market, all of the low unemployment, historically low unemployment, mm-hmm. and on and on. There are so many wonderful things economically happening. We were in a Tabor refund situation, meaning that here in Colorado, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights actually said that we would be sending checks out to taxpayers this coming up year. And I was very excited about that provision of the Taxpayer Bill of Rights kicking in, because everything was on an upward trend. Well, within the last couple of weeks, as you know, that has all changed.
Mm-hmm.
So we received an economic forecast just on Monday. And I know I sent you some of the documents. And by the way, your listeners can find those. They're right on the website, theledge.colorado.gov. There is a budget tab, and you can go to that budget tab, and you can find all of the forecasts there. Or you can look, it's under economic forecasts as well. So you can find those forecasts and look at them yourself if you're interested. But obviously, they're quite long. So we received those forecasts on March, Monday, March 16th, and they obviously have gone down. And even, by the time we received them, after they'd been to the printer, I think they were already outdated. But what happens is we need to now budget to the most recent forecast. So, first of all, I can tell you that that check, the Tabor refund check, is we're no longer in a Tabor refund situation. So that money comes off the top based on all of the economic indicators. But with that, they're really, just for a high-level answer to your question, we're basically at a break-even point right now. All of the growth that is being requested by departments, all of the bills that are being passed now and that were passed last legislative session in 2019 that haven't really kicked in yet, that money is really not there at this point. There's no ability for right now what we have over, according to Ledge Council, was $27.3 million, which in a $33 billion budget, $27 million, we're basically at break-even right now. So what you have to look at is that there will be caseload increases. Just think student growth. Just think growth in Medicaid counts. And with population growth, there are departments that do need to grow. For example, our state patrol. For example, if we have fewer or more prisoners in the prison system, those all need to be accounted for.
Okay, so actually, I kind of find this to be somewhat positive news, Kim Ransom, because there was all kinds of stuff that's being proposed that I actually didn't think was the proper role of government. And so I find this to be somewhat positive news, if there can be any kind of positive news, with the fact that it looks like the economic forecasts are not going to be as rosy as they certainly were. And we've got just a couple of minutes, Kim, and then you're going to be back on tomorrow morning at 6:15 again, and we'll continue this conversation. So what's your final thought for this morning, Kim Ransom?
Just that I agree with you as far as some of the legislation coming through that would have had negative impacts on our state. But right now, we also have businesses that are really hurting, and it's hurting the small businesses more. So I find it obviously tragic that these businesses are losing money based on the executive order from the governor to close all the businesses that cannot be doing what they're supposed to be doing and what they want to be doing. Gyms are being hit very hard, especially the small ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I know restaurants and bars are. So with that, I think that I'm hoping for a quick cure or a quick bounce back. And I will say that as a final point, that is both of the forecasts that we heard, because we hear two competing forecasts, the nonpartisan economists both said that we had a strong economy going into this, and they see this as being a very short, at this point, they see it as being a very short negative downward trend. And they both felt that it's going to be rising back up quickly once everything is under control.
Okay, well, there's good news in that, and I think there's also good news in getting a handle on just, you know, that spending that had been proposed. So, Kim Ransom, thank you so much. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6:15. So all you listeners, be sure and tune in for that, because Representative Kim Ransom, my representative, will have a lot more information. And I know you've been working so hard as a member of the Joint Budget Committee. Kim Ransom, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I will talk to you tomorrow, Kim. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. And on the line with me is a valued partner, and that's Jace McBride, and all your colleagues there at Presidential Wealth Management are valued partners. Jason McBride, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm still alive. Imagine that.
I am too, and I think the sun's going to be coming up here in just a little bit. So this is day three of Governor Polis's edict to close all bars and restaurants. And I think here in a couple of weeks, hopefully things will get totally settled down. But Jason, you found a really interesting article From Stat, it looks like it says, a fiasco in the making. As the coronavirus pandemic takes hold, we are making decisions without reliable data. This is really an excellent piece.
Well, it is, Kim. I found it interesting. It's an 8-page article. It's written by a doctor at Stanford, of all places. I mean, so, you know, none of this is exact, but none of what we're doing or the government's doing is exact either. And I thought it was interesting that he looked at the situation where an entire population was tested for the coronavirus, and he took it from the standpoint of one of the cruise ships, and you know, extrapolated the data out onto our general population, and you know, he believes that the death rate from this is maybe, you know, 0.125%. He gives himself room on either side of being wrong by 5 times. So it could be as low as 0.025 and maybe as high as 0.625. But that's nowhere close to the like 3.5% that's being trumpeted and hollered and screamed about in the media. Now, this isn't totally scientific either, but it's certainly reasonable.
Well, and yeah, and we need to start to have some level heads on this. You know, when the governor closed all the bars and restaurants for 30 days, except for a takeout, and then when Mayor Hancock did this for 8 weeks, that is going to put fear into people's you know, hearts. And I think good leadership would have been somewhat more measured. It would have been, you know, we're concerned, we're going to do this for 2 weeks, then we're going to come back and, you know, revisit it. But I think that there's been a lot of fear and panic that has been fomented by irresponsible politicians and media pundits, Jason.
You know, there's a sentence in this story of a quote from this guy, and it's kind of the same thing I was trying to get across on your show the other day, but it took me half an hour to get across what this guy says in one sentence. And he says, if we had not known about a new virus out there and had not checked individuals with PCR tests, the number of total deaths due to influenza-like illness would not seem unusual this year. At most, we might have casually noted that the flu season this year seems to be a bit worse than average. The media coverage would have been less than for an NBA game between the two most indifferent teams.
Wow.
And I agree. You know, if they hadn't blown this up and turned it into a video game and then 24/7, every second, every day, in your face, I think this kind of would have just passed and nobody would have really even known anything happened and life would go on. This is a very solid case of the, quote, cure being far worse than the disease.
Boy, and this is an important piece. Jason, we're just about out of time.
Yep.
But I would recommend that people reach out to you and your colleagues over there. Phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or through airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com. Jason, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and this is an excellent piece, and we'll get that out on Facebook. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be right back with Paul Lenigro regarding the this public option insurance here in Colorado. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. There is a lot of scary stuff that's happening down at the State House here in Colorado. And one of the things I'm super concerned about, or very concerned about, is House Bill 20, 1349. It's called the Colorado Affordable Healthcare Option. And it's concerning an option plan to be implemented by executive agencies in order to, quote unquote, create a more affordable health benefit plans for healthcare consumers in this state. Sounds like a lofty goal, but as we really get into it, we realize there's all kinds of force involved in this. And as we talk about issues on the show, we talk about them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to use force to implement it. On the line with me is Paul LaNigro. He is a group insurance analyst with GIA. They're GIA insurance brokers, been in business since 1984. And Paul has been doing a lot of research on this particular piece of legislation. And he has a show on KLZ. It's on every other Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. right here on KLZ 560 with host Dan Muir. And your next one will be on Wednesday, March 25th. And Paul LaNigro, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim.
And did I say everything about you? Is there anything else that our listeners should know about you?
No, I think you covered it really well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's jump in on this House Bill 1349. There is actually fines that will be levied on hospitals if they don't do what these unelected bureaucrats say they need to do. And that really concerns me. But you've been looking at this for a while. So set this up for us, our listeners.
Yes. When you go back to the original Obamacare legislation and discussion back in 2009, there was a move to put a public option in Obamacare as an option for people to buy insurance. Now, at the time, the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate. They had a supermajority in the Senate, and, of course, Obama was in the White House, so they could do anything they wanted at that time. But they chose not to put that public option in. There was a lot of pressure for them not to do it, and so that went away. But that irked a lot of progressives in Washington. They really wanted this public option. Well, we always felt that this public option was like your next step towards a single payer system, and that's why they wanted it. And so now, since they can't get it through on a federal level, you're seeing it trying to be done on a state level, especially in states that are controlled by the Democrats. They tried to do it in Connecticut, and it did get shot down recently. I believe there's one set to go into effect. I believe it's the state of Washington. It's not in effect yet, but I think they did pass something there. But they're trying to do it here in Colorado. Now, originally in Colorado, there was concern that there's like 13 or 14 counties in the state that have only one health insurance option. Now, isn't that ironic? Because Obamacare was supposed to increase choices, increase options, but in fact, it's reduced those. And that's evidenced by the fact that in these counties, and they're mainly rural counties, mainly in the mountain areas, that only have one health insurance plan option to choose from. So originally, this was brought about as a way to put another option in those counties. And even that we felt was a mistake, because we felt that if you put the public option in those counties, that the other option that was available through the private market would just leave and you'd still just have one option.
Well, but, and on that, Paul, there is no way when that you can outspend or outmaneuver government when they come in, because they have full power and they have full taxing authority. And so it is really difficult for private business to compete with government in that situation.
That is 100% spot on. And this thing with the public option morphed quickly from being an option in a small number of counties to an option all throughout the state, which we thought would it would go to anyway. We just didn't think it would be right from the outset. So now this is going to be an option throughout the state, and there's a lot of questions about it and concerns. For example, the insurance companies and the hospitals must participate in this. They have to.
So wait a minute. I thought the word was option, but now you're saying they have to. How's that work?
They have to participate. The doctors don't necessarily have to, and that's another issue there. But, for example, if a hospital refuses to participate in the Colorado option, the Department of Public Health and Environment may issue a warning, impose fines, or suspend, revoke, or impose conditions on the hospital's license.
Wow.
And that's right in the bill. That's I just read that verbatim.
Wow.
Okay, so then it the bill also creates a board, so that always worries me. Now there's a board overseeing this.
They're not elected, and they're unaccountable to the voters.
That's correct. So now, if a hospital decides not to participate, it sounds like they're going to be blackmailed into participating. Or their license could be suspended. Okay, so that's a big concern. Now, the other thing is the insurance companies have to offer the plan alongside of their private plan. So now you have and there's so many things about this. It just blows my mind away. But the insurance companies will have what are called private option plans, the plans they sell today, outside the public option, and then they'll have the public option plans available as well. Now,
so the insurance companies have to actually sell their competitors' product. Is that am I hearing you correct?
They have to sell this plan through the public option. So they'll have, in essence, two plans available for someone to buy: a private plan outside the public option, and the public option plan. And the benefits will probably be the same, but the public option plan will be priced lower than the private option plan. So my thinking, now I've been in insurance 35 years, and I'm thinking, well, if this public option plan is less expensive, who's going to buy the private option plans? And will the carriers then just decide to stop selling the private option plans? Or will they be forced to still sell the private option plans along with the public option? We know they have to sell the public option, but we're not sure if they still have to sell the private option. So once again, this thing could lead to the insurers pulling out of those private plans, and then all you have left is the public option.
So ultimately, then, you won't need the insurance companies. You just wouldn't need them here in Colorado. They probably would leave, wouldn't they?
Well, under the private plan, so they would stick around just to sell the public option plans. In essence, they would be most likely acting as administrators of those particular plans.
I see.
And I think what happens is they're keeping the private insurers involved in this just to avoid some opposition, because there's going to be a lot of opposition, and there already is a lot of opposition to this plan.
But then government will pick winners and losers. Which particular insurance companies would possibly be able to administer this plan, and others that wouldn't? And that is totally antithetical to a open and free market. Let's go back a little bit, though, to Obamacare. Paul, from what I can see, Obamacare actually accomplished a lot of what they wanted to do, and that is to create so much frustration with the consumer about high deductibles and raising the cost of their monthly premiums. So, and people are getting so frustrated about that you're starting to see them say, well, there's got to be a better idea. And here we have now government coming in saying, hey, we've got this public option. What do you think about that?
we had said early on in Obamacare, even before it was actually implemented, that it was designed to make the private market fail. And looking back, we were really right about that. It has done the things to the private market that we were predicting back in 2011, 2012, before it even was implemented. And so now if you look at the real success of Obamacare in terms of enrolling people and reducing the number of people without insurance, it's almost all because of the Medicaid expansion. Now, Medicaid is the government-run insurance program on a state level for low-income people. So, in essence, Medicaid is a welfare program. Unlike Medicare, which is funded by payroll tax dollars, Medicaid is for low-income people. That's where the success has been in increasing the number of people with insurance. In private insurance, you've got two different types of consumers. One are those people who do not get any type of premium subsidy, who have to pay the whole premium themselves. And then the people who do get the premium subsidy because they are under 400% of the federal poverty level. Now, Obamacare did increase enrollment by some of these people who are under the federal poverty level limit, but the number of people outside of that limit who do not get a subsidy, who pay the whole premium, those numbers have dropped dramatically. Okay, so the number of people buying insurance on their own without a subsidy has gone down, mainly because premiums have more than doubled. And for example, prior to Obamacare, I had private insurance, and I was paying maybe $800 to $1,000 a month for my family. Now I pay $3,000 a month.
Wow. And what's the deductible? How does that compare?
The deductible under my plan today is $8,000. And prior to Obamacare, it was $4,000.
Wow. Let's let our listeners just mull that around for a little bit. Let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. This is the Kim Munson Show. On the line with me is Paul Lenigro. He is with Group Insurance Analyst, or your Group Insurance Analyst, and it's GAI Insurance Brokers. Your phone number is 303-423-0162, 303-423-0162. Let's go to break, and we'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we're having a conversation with Paul Lenigro. He is a group insurance analyst. The company is GIA Insurance Brokers. They've been in business since 1984. And Paul actually has a show on KLZ 560. It's on every other Wednesday. The next show will be, and it's from noon to one, is We've Got You Covered, and that will be on Wednesday, March 25th. Paul, this is a fascinating conversation. What really precipitated this is House Bill 201349, which is what do we call this exactly? I don't think the name is actually what it really is. They call it the Colorado Affordable Health Care Option. And there's all kinds of force that I see with that, with fines and penalties. So option and fines and penalties don't really belong in the same sentence. And affordable, I'm not sure it's really going to be affordable as well. Before we went to break, Paul, you had mentioned personally this whole thing after Obamacare, before and after Obamacare, that prior to Obamacare, you were paying $800 to $1,000 for your family's insurance premiums and had a $4,000 deductible, and now you're paying $3,000 a month and an $8,000 deductible. That doesn't seem like that's more affordable to me.
No, I think that's why for years now we've been calling it the Unaffordable Care Act.
Yes.
And I think that's more appropriate as to what this is. The ACA certainly did help low income people and people who aren't working, but it doesn't help a lot of us who do work and pay our own premiums. And now we're doing this Colorado affordable health care option that might also turn into the unaffordable health care option. It's because it seems like every time government gets involved, the cost, our rates go up. And that's with every type of insurance that I see them touch.
Well, and not only that, Paul, typically when government gets involved, the price goes up, the quality goes down, and the supply becomes limited.
That there is a big concern about this bill, how it will impact rural hospitals. And out in those rural areas, things are a little different than here on the Front Range. And it's very possible that this could drive some of those rural hospitals right out of the state. And that would be a big problem for people in those areas.
You mentioned when we were in between break that there's a couple of other pieces of legislation that our listeners need to know about.
I'm really concerned, in addition to 1349, which is the public option, Senate Bill 5. Senate Bill 5 is a bill to change the way people pay their deductible and coinsurance or cost sharing with their insurance plan. So currently, if you go to the doctor and let's say you have a $25 copay, you pay that $25 copay to the doctor, and then you're done. This bill wants the insurance companies to collect the cost share from you, the consumer, and then the insurance company pay that cost share to the doctors.
Let me just ask this. So you go to the doctor and you're at the doctor's office and you could give them your copay right then and there. But Senate Bill 5 would say no, that the insurance company, you give it to the insurance company, then the insurance company gives it to the doctor. And certainly they don't work for free. And so the insurance company will have to take their cut as it goes by because they have to pay somebody to do that. This just doesn't even seem like it makes sense to me, Paul.
It makes no sense to me whatsoever. The insurance company is collecting from you, the consumer, a copayment, and that could be, it could be a $5 copayment, for example, on a very rich employer plan, or it could be a $50 copay, anything in between. But how much is it going to cost the insurance company to collect that copayment? That $25 copay, it could cost them $50 to collect it.
Right.
And then the insurance company has to add that into their administrative costs when they develop the rates for the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be an increased cost. That's going to drive premiums up. And in essence, to me, it looks like we're giving the medical community a free collection agency. And why should we be doing that in our premium? So that's a big concern. There's other concerns, too. So let's say you owe that cost share, deductible, coinsurance, copayments, and the insurance company can't collect it from you. Then what happens? Okay, does the insurance company cancel your coverage? Are they allowed to cancel your coverage? If not, who's going to cover that shortfall? The insurance companies cannot write it off as a bad debt. So when I look at it, I'm seeing that the insurance company has to take that uncollected dollar amount and roll it back into the premium for next year, meaning we, the consumer, are going to pay that additional premium. Now, that doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't seem right. And human nature as such is when the word gets out on the street that that they can't come after you really to pay your this copay, there will be people that won't pay. I mean, they just won't. And I think it's so important that people have skin in the game on any of these decisions. Even if it's a small copay that you pay at that time to the doctor so that you can be seen, you've got skin in the game. And I think that there has to be that responsibility of individuals. Otherwise, we're going to get into a situation where I think that healthcare would become very limited here in Colorado.
And not only limited, it'll be even more expensive. Now, what is this bill? What is the Senate Bill 5 going to add to the premium? You've got this public option who's out there saying, well, we're going to save you 12% in premium, and they're going to do that by paying less money to the hospitals. Now, the hospitals, in turn, how are they going to cover that shortfall? And what they're going to do is cost shift more onto plans outside the public option. They're going to cost shift that shortfall onto the private plans in the individual market, then onto the small group plans that are out there, which is going to drive those premiums up even more, which then might drive more people into the public option. So what's happening is you're cost shifting those shortfalls like they currently do with Medicare and Medicaid, but we're now cost shifting onto a smaller and smaller pool, which means the cost shift amount is much higher, driving the premiums up even higher. So once again, it's a vicious cycle, and it's designed to eliminate competition.
Absolutely. Because it's not sustainable. Paul, we've got probably about 5 minutes left. There was one other piece of legislation that you thought our listeners needed to know about.
Yes, and I think this is a House bill. It's 1158, and it's to cover infertility treatments. So it's not just the diagnosis that's covered today, but treatment and preserve. And it's being sponsored by a Democrat in the House, and in my understanding, she has some issues with infertility. Infertility treatment is very expensive. Mm-hmm. Infertility treatment is not one of the 10 essential health benefit mandates under Obamacare. So this would be an additional mandate. It would probably, between Senate Bill 5 and 1158 for infertility, you're probably adding another 3-5% premium on top of our already ridiculously high premiums. So you're going to drive premiums up even more. But on the other hand, it's such a contradiction because they want to cut premiums, and that's how they're pushing the public option. And then on the other hand, they're adding in more mandates like infertility and then a cost share collecting by the carriers that then eat into that savings. It makes no sense. It's not logical thinking. And so I don't get it. Why keep adding these mandates in when everyone's screaming about the cost of the insurance? These mandates increase those costs. And there's another thing, too. Colorado needs to be very careful because the HHS in Washington, they're starting to come back to the states now that are adding these mandates. These mandates drive up premium. And the federal government is not responsible for reimbursing the states for those premium subsidy amounts above those 10 essential health benefit mandates. And so if they don't watch it here, the state of Colorado is going to owe Washington a lot of money. And who's going to pay that?
Well, it would be the people of Colorado. And, you know, so many, of course, people are really paying attention to a lot of the news out there, you know, with this coronavirus and all that out there, which I think it's good that people are paying attention. But yet, eventually government runs out of money. Eventually Colorado will run out of money. And it is bad public policy that's happening down at the State House. And all these things, I love the fact that you brought all this together, because you can't look at just one piece of legislation down there on its own. You've got to look at the whole big picture of what is happening. And I think you've done a really good job on that, Paul Lenigro. We have just a couple of minutes left. What would be the final thoughts that you want to leave with our listeners?
Well, I think with what's going on down at the State House here in Colorado is a real concern. People need to voice their concerns, get down there and testify against these. We're getting over-mandated, over-regulated by the state of Colorado, and it's going to turn us into a welfare state. We're going to wind up with a single-payer system in Colorado, I believe a single-payer system is going to drive out the people in the state who are productive and attract those who are not productive, which will create even more problems. I think it'll create shortages. And I think it's just not the right thing for Colorado. And so we need to really be involved in this and make our voices heard that we don't want this affordable health care option. We don't want the public option.
Well, and just right there in the title, there's two things that are not true. It's not going to be affordable, and it's not an option, because you can see force all over it because of the words that you mentioned: impose fines, suspend, revoke, or impose conditions on a hospital's license. Those are force words. Paula Nigro, thank you so much. You are a group insurance analyst. The company is GIA Insurance Brokers, been in business since 1984. You've got a show on KLZ 560 every other Wednesday. The next show will be Wednesday, March 25th. We've got you covered. Phone number is 303-423-0162. That's 303-423-0162. Paul Lenigro, thank you so much for sharing all of this information with us.
Well, thank you, Kim.
And our quote for today is from Alexander Hamilton. He says, "Of those men who have overturned the liberties of republics, the greatest number have begun their career by paying an obsequious court to the people, commencing demagogues and ending tyrants." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate, listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I-